Hi, it's Sean D'Souza, and what you're listening to is a series called 22 Minutes with Sean. But what we're going to explore in this series is a whole bunch of questions that members at 5000 BC ask. We'll look at how these questions can be answered in a very short period of time so that you can move ahead. So here we go, 22 Minutes with Sean.
My name is Holly Chantel of the Land of Brand, and I work with coaches helping them build their brands. And my questions for today are around launching a product in a worn-out market. Specifically, what I want to launch is a membership program. But since I work with coaches, membership programs are pretty much a dime a dozen, and there's a lot of skepticism around them. So that's led me to be a little hesitant in launching my own. So kind of the first kind of broad spectrum question, and then we'll get a little more narrow, is how do you launch a product into a market that's just kind of worn out with that particular type of product?
Personally, I don't think that such a market exists. So a lot of people, they say markets are oversaturated. I don't think that's true. I think that all the information that needs to be written about most stuff is already there. There is new information in some way, new angles to information, new studies or whatever. But by and large, probably 95% of what's out there is already been out there for 100 years maybe, or 50 years or whatever. So what people are looking for isn't necessarily information, but your point of view, factoring in that they trust you, they trust your advice, they trust your angle, your voice, they like that. So for instance, I get a newsletter from a friend of mine, Paul Jarvis, and there is nothing that Paul says that isn't something I already know, haven't experienced, but I like the way he writes. So I subscribe and I read his newsletter every week. It just comes in on a Sunday, and I read it on a Monday, and it's the most pleasant thing I do on a Monday morning. Is it new? No, it's not. But it's wonderful. And would I pay for it? I might.
Great. Yes, and I agree. That's absolutely true. It's the point of view is, again, kind of your brand, and that's what people are buying into. So that makes total sense. And so let's just dive into actually just launching a membership. I've done the pre-sale course, and I'm wondering, is the sequence any different for launching a membership than it would for launching a pre-sale course? And if so, like, what intricacies or what differences might you bring in?
I don't think there are any differences in launching a product or service or training or anything. Eventually, the sequence is very simple, that people show up to a wedding because there was enough pre-sale. The invitations went out, they were told about it, and then eventually the date comes along and people show up. If you decide you're going to have a wedding in 3 days, no one has any notice, no one has any preparation in place. Whatever happens, happens. So I forget the exact things that we cover in the pre-sale course, but the gist of it is that you have to have enough time for the client to buy into the product before they pay. So that's the most important thing. They're going to buy long before they pay. And people say, what does that mean? But if you think about it for a second, you figure it out by yourself. People don't necessarily want to buy when you're selling it, so you have to have a date and then a back kind of a launching sequence that goes back to 3 months, 6 months, whatever time you have at your disposal. If it's too quick, then it depends on the risk factor. If it's a very high-priced thing, then I might take more time. If it's a low price thing, I might take less time to decide. whatever it is, I need to know why I'm buying into this. And if you look at it, you might think, well, what I have to do is I have to put a membership site with A and B and C and D and E and F and F, everything inside. But look at the launch of a new phone. For instance, I'm not familiar with Samsung because I don't use it, but I'm familiar with, say, iPhone or Adobe. And when they launch a product, usually it has 351 amendments or 351 improvements. But they only stress one thing, and then they go deep into that one thing, and then they go to the second thing and third thing. It's almost like a movie. You know, this is the hero, and then this is the supporting cast, and then you have just the general 300 people. So when you're launching, you have to go repeatedly on that one big thing that's going to make a difference to me. So if you listen to the podcast, almost consistently I will say 5000 BC is a very safe place. Most of the people there are introverts except me, who's an extrovert. And then I say that the next time and the third time and the fourth time. And usually I'll bring in the supporting actors and I'll say something else about 5000 BC. But most of the time I'm saying the same thing. And that's what you have to do. If you're pre-selling something, say the same thing in 10 different ways if you have to. And then eventually that's the only thing that people buy. And then you have the launch.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And this is kind of a side question, but is the podcast, is that your primary marketing tool for 5000 BC, or are there other lines of traffic that are going into that sequence?
It has become the primary tool, but we've only had the podcast for 2 years, and we've had 5000 BC for 13 years. But once the podcast started, there was a huge uptick in the number of people that signed up to 5000 BC. I mean, okay. We were at one point, we were having lots of trouble with the website and everything else as well, but we were really struggling to get in members in 5000 BC. And we've not had that ever since we've had the podcast. You'll notice that I do almost no promotion of any other thing on the podcast. Maybe 5000 BC and something else, but 5000 BC is always existing or always there. This consistency is very important. If you think, well, I'll do this and this and this, we just try to get people to one point. So even when I'm on a call with, doing an interview with someone, I won't drive them to the podcast and the membership site and something else. I will just drive them to one point, knowing fully well that once they get to that one point, they will then be led to the other points from that one point. So you have to decide, for me in the calls and the interviews, it will be specifically to, say, the subscription of the Psychotactics newsletter. If they get to the podcast, it is specifically to 5000 BC. That's consistent no matter what happens. So even on the call itself, say I'm doing an interview with someone, and let's say we're talking about resistance, and at the end of it, I'll go to psychotactics.com/resistance. When they go to resistance and when they get that download of that book, it tells them that they're also being subscribed to the newsletter. So eventually they get to the newsletter. Even if there is this, I'm doing a podcast on the brain audit, you go to psychotactics.com/xbrain, and then you get subscribed to the newsletter. So eventually it just ends up at one point, and that's more critical than anything else, that the one point is where you send them to consistently, send one message consistently.
Great. Okay. And so what 5000 BC has been around for, like you said, 13 years. It's obviously very, very active. And one of the hesitations I have to starting a membership is that keeping that activity. Is there a critical number you think that you need to get in all at once in order to kind of kick off the membership and make sure that you have that activity going?
So activity is, you have two spates of activity. One is too much activity, and then the other is no activity at all. There's never a good amount of activity, even in 5000 BC. It might seem like that, but in reality, there's always too much or too little. And if you're going to start up a membership site, then you have two options. The first is you get the hell out of there and don't do anything and hope like that everybody is going to somehow motivate themselves and talk to each other, which some people do. And the second one is you say, well, I'm going to be there maybe 5 times a day or 3 times a day or whatever. By and large, in today's world, people are going to be distracted. So getting them to one point. So with 5000 BC, what we have noticed is that we have 2 or 3 points. The first is people will go there for information. So they will go there to read a specific article, which is interesting. They will go there to get the vanishing reports, even if they don't read the articles. So that's information-based. The clients that are there just because they don't exactly trust everything that's on Google and everywhere else. They trust what we're saying to a greater extent. And so they come and they get that information in the form of articles or questions or vanishing reports. The vanishing reports are interesting because they know they're vanishing. And so that becomes some kind of scarcity, which is... But it falls under that category of information. The second thing that people do is they want some kind of, community. So they realize that their job is quite lonely, and having this community to talk to on a regular basis. We find this even in courses. There will be some people who come there just for the information, just for the assignments, then they'll be gone. And some of them will hang around and they'll be talking about their daughter and something else and something else. So you have information, you have community. And the third is to somehow have some accountability. And that's what we have with the taking action, for instance. So the taking action, the cave guides, all of that has been set up so that you have some level of accountability, because people feel, well, I'm just going to start this and I'm going to go wandering off somewhere. So if you just worked on these three things, which is slowly but surely, you created information, community, and accountability. And the toughest one would be the community one, because that involves people just chattering away because they enjoy it. And I'm one of those people. I would enjoy a conversation, but not everyone does. In fact, for instance, Renuka gets completely like, oh, what's all this stuff? Like, she would go there for a taking action thing. That's what she would join 5000 BC for. She wouldn't join it for community.
Right. That's funny, because that was going to be exactly what I started asking questions about, because it sounds like I'm a lot more like Renuka. What was interesting was that when you said, sometimes it's too busy and sometimes it's not busy enough, I wonder if that's more just from your perception, because you're always just in there answering and you're very aware of the activity levels. Because I know the way I use it, and I've been in 5000 BC for 5 years now, is the information piece. When I am working on something and I want someone, an outside perspective, or if I have been reading the vanishing reports, or I've been reading some other piece of information, I want to get more, then I go into 5000 BC and I just look it up. And then the other aspect is the giving back. I feel like I don't want to just keep taking, asking questions and taking. So sometimes I'll come back on and, answer questions. So that's, what I primarily use it for. And that's what I'm good at in general, is the kind of giving and receiving of information. The community piece is another piece that's very terrifying to me when starting a membership, because that does not come natural to me, being an introvert. Do I need an extrovert business partner to do this, or how would you suggest a introvert build community? Like, do you have any tips around that?
See, the thing about community is that you don't necessarily have to be an extrovert. You have to communicate the fact that you're an introvert, that you're not happy being shown and showing up 25 times a day, that you're going to show up a few times a day. But what you want to do is you want to make sure that people know each other. So one of the things that happens in membership sites, in Facebook groups and all that stuff, is nobody knows each other. And so, you know, all they're doing is like saying, okay, I like this, so they'll click on a like button or whatever. But they don't know each other. And once you get people to know each other, they're more likely to stay. Now, this has a downside. If you have three or four people that know each other and two or three of them leave, then the fourth is going to leave as well. So we have this on a fairly regular basis where, you know, people will stay because they know everybody and people will leave because they know everybody. But by and large, people who are getting value from it will stay, and so the rest of the group will stay as well. People want to be part of a community, of a neighborhood, of like-minded people, and your job or the job of someone in your organization is to make sure that they get to know each other. So we have this with the taking action thing as well, where we say, put your taking action post up, and we just recently started this, and then go and find someone else in 5000 BC and ask for their help. Just to not comment on your stuff, not say how good or great it is, but just to keep you going. Now they have made a contact with another person, and they show up for that person, not for you, but for that person. And the other person shows up for them. They have that commitment to each other, and you are the owner of the website. And whether you show up or don't show up is not relevant anymore. You have to show up in other bits of it, but not necessarily in that bit. As long as they feel part of it, that community, even if it's just two people, that's enough.
Right. I can definitely see the truth in that. And that's partly why, or I've found that because I became a cave guide, and that was to kind of hold me accountable to showing up and like I said, kind of giving back information. And now I go and seek those people that I quote unquote guided and when they first initially or welcome them when they first initially joined 5000 BC, and I try to make a point of commenting on their pieces. So I can totally see how that would happen even if you're not a cave guide, that you know begin to build a relationship or kind of want to check in on what someone else is doing that you've commented on or that has helped you. So that's very, very helpful.
So that actually leads to this concept called insourcing. And that is that when a community works together, so whether you look at a course, a workshop, anything, the moment the community pitches in, that creates this thing called socio something something in economics. And the countries that do better in life are those that pitch in, that help each other, not the countries where you're suspicious of your neighbor all the time. So we work, a lot of people join 5000 BC and go, but what if someone copies my stuff? What if someone cheats? And I go, well, if that's the way you feel, you shouldn't join, because that's not what's going to happen, but you will feel that's happening. So you shouldn't join. And instead, what they do is end up joining anyway. Mm-hmm.
So I have one last question. So I'm curious how your waiting list works. I was thinking, like, I was trying to think of ways for myself to kind of keep the fresh flow of people the flow of people coming in fresh on a long-term basis. And it seemed like doing something like a waiting list or opening the membership up every so often versus just having it kind of a rolling launch, which I feel like would be a lot to maintain. So I'm curious about your waiting list and how that works, and if you have that set up as an automated kind of follow-up sequence where you just kind of turn it on and the people get the email to sign up, or how that functions.
So it's not really a waiting list. It's for want of a better word, it is a wait until 21 days pass before you're accepted in. It's not really what you would call a normal waiting list, which is, you know, it's going to open up in June or whatever. However, so here's how it works. The first is the person joins the waiting list and they pay for a waiting list. Now, I didn't know that this wasn't common. To me, it makes perfect sense. So I put it in and people say, well, that's pretty audacious, but we're going to join anyway. So that's fine. They then get accepted or rejected. And depending on, Renuka will do some kind of check on them before, so they can't join right away and they have to wait 21 days. And then you will get people that will say, well, can't I join today? Why can't I join today? And that's like a good reason to reject them. You know, the people who are in this super hurry to get results, because once they get in, they want results and then they go, no, I want my money back. And we don't have a money back policy in 5000 BC. So now we have to do this battle with people that are in the super hurry. And so we filter out people based on what they're saying, and if we find too much aggravation before they join, then we go, sorry, but you can't join. So that's how approximately the waiting list works. It just stays there for 21 days before you can join. However, a lot of people do think that it's going to open up in 6 months from now, whatever, and they just get on the waiting list. This is because people don't tend to read everything, and that's what they see, even though we put it in bold and made it more interesting, but they just don't see it. From time to time, maybe twice a year, what we'll do is we'll drop that concept of the waiting list. This is because people don't read. So they get to the site, they go, oh, there's a waiting list for 5000 BC. I can't join now, I'm going out from here. And then twice a year, we will say, okay, there is no waiting list today. You can join 5000 BC in the next 3 days. And then you'll get 50 or 60 people joining in those 3 days, simply because they didn't read or because they've always wanted to join but didn't join or whatever reason. So that's approximately how it works. First is you get on the waiting list, you get checked out 21 days, you're in. Alternatively, we take the little risk that someone unsuitable may join, but most of the time that's not the case. So twice a year we'll do just a promotion saying, there's no waiting list today. You want to join, you get in, and that's it.
Interesting. So I love how you're kind of identifying the red flags of unideal clients and then building filters to make sure that they don't get through. But it's a very smart way of doing it. So it's not like you're turning these people away with your copy or whatnot. You're actually physically creating barriers so that they don't end up in becoming clients.
Yeah, the barrier is very important. When we didn't have the barrier, it was much harder to get clients to sign up. So having some kind of barrier is important.
So those are all of my questions about the membership. And again, I really appreciate you taking the time to answer these questions. And I'm going to look over my notes and kind of reassess my launch plan, which will hopefully be toward the end of this year. And hopefully it'll be as fun as 5000 BC is, because I'm a huge fan and have been in it for many years. And I just want to kind of provide that same kind of space, because what you do is just so awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's also a launching pad. So people who are in 5000 BC, they generate about 90% of our income. So when you say, well, is this a lot of work? Yes, it's a lot of work. But you have to think of what other work you'd have to do if you didn't do this lot of work. You'd have to do other sorts of lot of work. And so you'd end up with a lot of work anyway.
Right.
It's better to do it in a format that where people
that
like.
You like.
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. Whatever kind of hard work you're going to do, might as well be something you enjoy. And my format will be a little bit different because I have a kind of different schedule. So, I think that's a good philosophy to live by. Is, you know, if you're going to be doing a lot of work, it better be something that you enjoy. So thank you again, Sean. I really appreciate you answering my questions.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.